It's a way for you to find some calm when there is immediate storm around. And I like giving that as a quick strategy because educators need something when they're like boots are on the ground. It could be in the middle of a lesson. It could be, let's just take a second here. Like, whoa, like I'm feeling really flustered right now. Like, let's just take a second and recalibrate.
Welcome to the Society's Child podcast, where we have real conversations about being a trauma-responsive educator in the midst of a significant mental health crisis. Hi, I'm Trish Senzek, a former educator, compassion advocate, and Jesus lover, and I'm so grateful that you're here. Are you feeling confuzzled about your students' behavior and needs? You're not alone. If trauma-informed strategies leave you wondering, what's next? Don't worry. My friend, I've been there too. As a foster mom and a child of complex trauma mixed with my experience as a teacher, it's led me to finding a compassionate, whole child approach that's evidence-based, practical, and transformational, and I'm so eager to share it with you. Whether you want to connect with your students on a deeper level, create a trauma-sensitive environment, or you just need a little bit of encouragement or support, you're in the right place. So grab a drink, a pen, or your earbuds, and let's work together to create a safe and student-attuned, trauma-responsive school culture. Society's children need you. So let's get started. Hey friends, welcome back. I'm excited today because we have a seasoned occupational therapist as a special guest today. She has over 30 years of experience working with neurodivergent and neurotypical adults and youth, has a lot of experience in the classroom, and is very familiar with what it means to work with kids, with IEPs, with teachers working with them, and so on. She runs Zensational Kids, and they even have a global impact spanning 120 countries, and they even practice enriching lives of students and educators in 11,000 schools worldwide. I'm excited to have her here with you today. This accomplished author, speaker, mindfulness coach has lots of great wisdom to talk to you about. And so it's going to be a two-part series. So I'm excited to get her introduced to you guys. So here we go. Here is part one. So hi, I am so excited, Allison, to have you here today with us. And it's exciting that you're bringing your expertise to our listeners and helping us learn just a little bit more about what we can do for our kids on our campuses. So can you tell us a little bit about how you came to this line of work? Tell us about you and why this stuff interests you.
Sure. Thank you. And thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to share, especially sharing for people that are so involved in children's lives and just want to make lives better and learning better.
Thank you for being here.
I am by profession an occupational therapist. I've always specialized in pediatrics, always worked with kids. I've had over 30 years of working in schools, which is pretty crazy when I think about it. The beginning of my career, very, very typical school-based OT. Worked on handwriting, sensory processing, accessing education, attention, behavior, you know, all of the typical things that kids that are classified in schools with diagnoses like ADHD and autism and Down syndrome and anxiety, you know, all of those kind of typical diagnoses that we see. And about 12, 15 years ago, I don't know if I kind of like hit a wall in my profession, but it just like, it seemed to me like, you know, God, we're working on the same goals over and over again. And God, these sessions are just like grueling. And, you know, teachers are just having such a hard time with what I'll call now is our neurodivergent population. 15 years ago, we really didn't use that terminology, but I really do like saying neurodivergent, neurodiverse, opposed to, you know, all these different, you know, DSM diagnoses. And it was around this time that just myself, I started exploring contemplative practices. So yoga, meditation, mindfulness, qigong. I mean, it just started showing up for me. Like it wasn't like, I think I should do this for myself. It just sort of happened in my life. And one of my very first yoga classes that I was in, again, I'm new to the practice, like not a lot of people, there weren't yoga studios everywhere 15 years ago. So I was just very open-minded, like, all right, let's just see what this is all about. I mean, I just remember it so clearly of being in this class, following the instructor's instruction of how I'm breathing, how I'm moving, pay attention to how it feels. And I'm starting to realize that my body is feeling different and my mind, it's just, everything just seems softer, quieter. I'm like, this is like pretty amazing. Cause I look at the clock. I'm like, I've been in here for like 10 minutes and I'm feeling really different. And also just to give a little background, growing up, like I was a dancer. So very used to being in my body. Now I was a mother of three young children. So very used to being stressed and knowing what that felt like. So having this opportunity, you know, in the first 10 minutes of a class to experience this different feeling within my mind and body, I'm like, this is like unbelievable. And then I just started thinking about all the kids that I was seeing in school and thinking, do they ever feel like this? Because I knew feeling like this, and when I say this, I felt grounded, I felt safe in my body, I felt calm, I felt light. I knew that the kids that I was working with never really felt this way. And to me, it just seemed like any kind of functioning, I would think that it needs this kind of internal foundation in order to function well. Like that's sort of like, of course, we all actually intuitively know that. We don't need somebody to tell us, right? When your body doesn't have aches and pains, you move better. When your mind isn't all rattled and chaotic, you think better, right? We don't need scientists to tell us that. That's, you know, sort of like common sense. So what came to me was like, gosh, I wonder if like I just teach the kids that I'm working with some of these things that I'm doing in my own body, what would their functioning be like? Because in school-based therapy, you're like goal, 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 IEP, assess, goal, 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 IEP, assess. So what if I like, all right, stop looking at how do they form the letter A? You know, do they know what a square is? You know, how are they writing their letters and tying their shoes? Stop looking at all of that and start teaching some of these things. Because what, you know, because of my background as a therapist, I know about physiology. I knew about neurology. I knew about your autonomic nervous system. So I knew I'm affecting my autonomic nervous system, right? Helping it to calm down, to activate the parasympathetic branch. My whole idea was, well, if I can help the kids that I'm working with learn how to breathe in this way, move in this way, focus their attention, not on a 15-minute task, but for even like 2 minutes, to have focus for 2 minutes, what then happens once I get the physiological state, I call it like in a calm, engaged, ready to learn state, what happens to the function? And what I started to see really quickly was I don't have to actually work on a lot of those skills that we have on those IEPs. They actually have the skill to do it, but what was blocking their ability for being able to do that is this overwhelming stress, contraction, fear of having to produce, overwhelm, sensory stimulation, sensory overwhelm. So when I was able to help them shift their physiology, their function changed, their function improved. What was built from there was, okay, how can I keep teaching kids this? I really wasn't worried in the beginning, like, would it be accepted? I was just a therapist and I'm going to do what works. And this to me was working. And proof of that was even teachers were saying to me, what'd you do in therapy today? Because when Johnny came back, He sat with the group. He followed the directions. He played nicely next to another child. Like, they were just reporting all of these essentially functional behaviors that were present. And I didn't teach the child those things in therapy, but I helped them align their nervous system so that they were able to engage in those natural activities. So from there, what happened was I just got on this mission of, I don't care what anybody says, because my colleagues were like, don't tell anybody you're doing yoga and mindfulness in this school. Like, just don't, they're just going to freak out. I'm like, okay, I'll just be quiet. And along with being quiet, what I was doing was, because sometimes I would be observed by, you know, director of special ed or the principal, and I needed to be able to tell them what I was doing. So I just started like, I need the research. Like, what am I going to tell them? What am I going to tell them I'm doing? So, you know, 15 years ago, I was able to find things about the autonomic nervous system and breathing techniques and things like that. It was so successful. They really weren't questioning me. They were more interested in like, okay, how could we have Allison do more of this? And that's what I did. I found ways to make it more accessible in school, in the school, not only for our neurodiverse population, but for all classrooms, because anybody that's working in any classroom knows you have your students that are classified. Say you have, you know, you're in an inclusive classroom and you have two, three students with an IEP and a diagnosis. There are at least another third, at least, I'm really being very conservative here. You have at least another third of your classroom that is overtly struggling in some way, whether it's anxiety, chronic stress, they're in shutdown, they are slow processors, they're movers and shakers, and they can't calm themselves down. I mean, when I really ask teachers, they'll say more than half their class is displaying, like, they need more support than what is given to them. And what teachers typically will do is, you know, they'll ask for accommodations. They'll ask for support. You know, they have these 504 meetings, INRS, you have INRS meetings, and teachers would love more therapeutic help in the classroom, but you can't classify everybody. So I then was just on a mission of, how do I support all these kids, the kids on my caseload, and the other kids that are struggling? And, oh, what about the other kids that are kind of like, they're in kind of shutdown, they're quiet. Just because they're quiet and they're compliant, it doesn't mean that they're getting everything, right? They're actually in this other mode sometimes of overwhelm and shutdown. They're in freeze. So how do I help them? And then when it sort of evolved into a lot because of the science and then my own observation is, how do I help these teachers? Because these poor teachers are just a ball of nerves. They're struggling so, and understandably. And that really, I mean, that was like the birth of Zensational Kids, of when I got to a point where I clearly have the tools that individuals of all ages and all abilities can learn how to access, of getting into their own physiology and helping themselves shift into states. I'm just going to call it states of well-being. You know, we now have the science supporting and understanding how it is that when we breathe in a certain way, what is happening within our physiology, what is happening within our neurology and our hormonal system. Now it's a matter of, I want to say, like, convincing schools that these types of things are really going to help you with so many of the challenges that you're having right now, from educator burnout to students not really being able to stay in the classroom, students not showing up, right? We have the highest rate of kids just, they're not able to even come to school. I really feel like this is the answer, you know, and there's so many different pieces of the science that are coming together right now from all of the work being done on trauma and of understanding mental health and understanding well-being and now understanding mindfulness and how it impacts the neurology and the physiology and how it just makes sense for learning. Right? Learning's not all just in the mind, right? There's more involved. So to me, it's a very exciting time. And I try to stay in this state of excitement about it because I've also been in this for a really long time, you know, staying hopeful that there is change really coming because we need change right now.
So thank you for that. I really love the evolution of how this has happened for you and the way that you started working and then what you saw and the excitement and all that you're bringing to this. And I think it's so helpful because a lot of times you're right. We as educators are so overwhelmed that sometimes it's very difficult to see the diversity in our classrooms because we're so focused on what we need to do. I would love for you to talk a little bit about kind of the basics, the neuroscience of the learning and the overwhelm. Can you talk a little bit about the science that, like you said, with the breathing, they know what's happening with the breathing in our bodies. Break that down a little bit more for someone who might be a visual learner. And then can you give some practical strategies for an educator who might be in the middle of a chaotic situation in the moment, whether that's internally in themselves or they're seeing something unfold in front of them, how they can take those actual practical techniques and maybe give them a few strategies of what they can do in terms of calming their brain or activating that sense of what you say is happening in the body in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Let's just start at the beginning of what we're seeing in classrooms. We're seeing a lot of behaviors. This is probably the biggest thing that teachers are struggling with. And the things that we're seeing are kids could be really, really aggressive. They could be in what we call like fight and flight. So they're anxious, they're jittery, they got to move all the time. And then we also see the opposite of just they're in freeze. They're shutting down, they're dissociating, they're hiding. I mean, in middle school, you see a hood over their head or they're sleeping.
Yes.
Right? Like sleeping in class or they're zoning out. We're seeing these things that are giving us a little bit of a window into what's happening inside their body. So behaviors don't come out of nowhere. They come out of what is being experienced inside. And most of the time, it's not within the individual's awareness. It's just there. What I like to help educators do is like reframe the behavior. So the behavior is not to get out of something. It's not to piss you off, right? It's not to give you a hard time. Yes. It's an indicator that the child is just, they're having a hard time. And that physiological response, which is the behavior, it's that nervous system driving them to survival. So that's the role of our nervous system. It's always working for us to keep us surviving.
Yes.
So for example, our nervous system, it keeps us breathing. We don't have to think about breathing. It digests our food. It keeps our heart beating. We don't need to think about those things. They're automatic because they're there to keep us alive. So what happens for a lot of our kids, especially those that have experienced trauma, is that unconsciously they're always in this state of survival. They perceive a lot of what's happening around them as being threat and danger and triggering. So the behavior that we see, it's insight into what's out of balance within the nervous system. The practices that I bring into classrooms is really about, well, how do we realign that? How do we rebalance the nervous system so that we can bring in more calm? And when I say bring in more calm, what we're doing is we're activating the branch of the nervous system called the parasympathetic nervous system. So we have these two branches of our nervous system, the sympathetic nervous system, which really drives like a stress response, and the parasympathetic nervous system, which drives relaxation. So the sympathetic nervous system is sort of like putting your foot on the gas pedal so that you go, 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 go. And a lot of us, we live there all the time because I got to go pick up the kids and I got to go home and I got to make dinner and I got to. So we have a lot of kids living in stress mode like that. And we've got a lot of adults living in stress mode like that too. And then we have this parasympathetic branch, which is like putting the brake on the nervous system. That is about bringing more relaxation. A lot of what we're doing is, well, we want to find balance within those two systems. And I can go deeper into that about like looking at it from a polyvagal lens, but I think that that might just be a little too much to get into right now. So I'm going to just keep it very, very simplistic. When we have balance of those two systems, we call that like the window of tolerance, our window to be able to be engaged and to be resilient and to be interactive and connected to others and to be relational. And what we want to do is we want to widen that window. So we know that through these practices, we can play with what we have, like this automatic sense of our nervous system, but we could also play very volitionally and intentionally and manage it in different ways. So I'm going to give you one example of a quick way to activate your parasympathetic nervous system and help yourself calm down in, it could really be 30 seconds. So I'm going to show you, I'm going to explain it to you, show it to you, and then we're just going to do a couple of rounds of it.
Beautiful. So
it's called the physiological sigh. And what you do is you're going to breathe in two times quickly, but fully through your nose. So it looks like this. And then through your mouth very slowly. Okay, so let's do that. We'll do like three rounds of that together. You ready?
Ready.
There we go. So breathe in through your nose two times. And out through your mouth. And the next one, you could actually exhale as a sigh. So breathe in. Oh. Do one more time. Breathe in. And exhale. And then just check in and notice, you know, how that feels.
I can already feel my body just kind of calming down and really just answering that, going, oh, it's almost like a thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it's a way for you to find some calm when there is immediate storm around. And I like giving that as a quick strategy because educators need something when their like boots are on the ground. It could be in the middle of a lesson. It could be, let's just take a second here. Like, whoa, like I'm feeling really flustered right now. Like, let's just take a second and recalibrate, you know?
I love that we could also do that with our students. We see the energy changing in the room or things are starting to get a little restless. We could literally give them the vocabulary and say, hey guys, we're going to just do a check-in real quick. Let's everybody take a breath and let's everybody do this right now. What did that take? 15 seconds for us to do that?
That just took 15 seconds. But right. I even say, can you stop for 2 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
2 minutes in your day to do a rebalance.
There you go, friends. That's part one of our interview with Allison Morgan. And I hope you found some nuggets and some strategies that you can take back and just simply implement into your classroom. I would love for you to check out Allison's website. She is actually leaving a special option for our listeners. If you will look in the show notes for sensationalkids.com/free stuff, you will find a free month to her platform that is a click and play way to go to bring these strategies right into your classroom. You don't have to learn anything new. You just simply play them and they work for the kids. So go check it out. She's got this offer just for us. Next week, we will finish with part two, and there's a lot more really good information where that one came from. So I hope you'll tune in next week and hear the rest of this interview. If you're looking for ways to build more peace in your career, I've created a list of 75 affirmations based on 25 Bible scriptures, and I'd love to share it with you and help you keep your sanity. You can go to trishz.com/Bible-AFFS. That's AFFS for affirmations. I'll also leave the link in the show notes for you too. Until next time, my friend, stay grounded, stay regulated, and stay prayed up. Hey, amazing educators, thanks for tuning in. If you found this episode helpful, I'd love for you to hit subscribe and leave a review. Even better, share this episode with a colleague. And hey, I'd love to connect with you on social media. You can even join my Facebook group for some extra support and a dash of inspiration. I've left all the links in the show notes. Until next time, my friend, remember, you're not alone on this journey. You've got this. Keep making a difference and stay teach-tastic.